are mine. I'll be here till the end of time. So you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
So I know there was a more popular, I guess, more watched national debate going on last night. But the debate that everyone in Seattle is caring about and you know, picking a side is, does Russell Wilson play Sunday, 10 a.m. versus New York Jets?
Ooh.
That's what we want to talk about here. Should he stay in or should he?
I mean, he's going to play.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's Russ, and you could see it, and... For those of you that aren't aware,
206 Sports Jocks, by the way, let's launch in there.
But I
Jake
mean,
and Brandon here.
If you listen to us, you're probably aware of this already. Russell Wilson sustained a knee injury, relatively minor, but the problem with those is, like, you remember Robert Griffin III in that playoff game? I think he had, like, a sprained knee or something that turned into a colossal knee injury
in
the game.
Yes. My memory of that game is just being in those odd moments where you just want to get out of the game.
Yeah.
You do not belong.
And then even as Seahawks fans, because we were the team that he got injured against, I was watching that, like, thinking, you know, for this young man's future. I mean, I wanted to beat them at their best, and I thought we could have done that anyways. And we did end up winning, which was nice because it was a playoff game, but you still feel bad for the guy. Like, I don't want to see, you know, like, and his career's never been the same since then. But so Russell Wilson's injury for
Shanahan
those of you,
decision, right? That's one of the.
Well, it was Shanahan not protecting the player from himself.
Yeah.
So it was an RG3 decision, but Shanahan could have overruled. So ultimately, I guess the buck stops with Shanahan. But yeah, Russell Wilson currently has a sprained MCL medial collateral ligament in his left knee. For those of you that don't know, I've got a pretty archaic picture here. The femur is up high, the patella right in the middle, ACL. Yeah, patella is the kneecap. ACL right underneath the patella. MCL is to the right of the ACL, and the LCL is to the left and right even with the MCL,
so that
which
makes
are both
sense
above
because
the tibia and fibula.
A lot of Latin on the show tonight.
Yep.
So if you look to where the guy fell on him, that's kind of...
It looked horrible when it happened. Like, he's that bubble water that he takes baths with or whatever, smart water. I don't know what it is. Like, that stuff's got to be pretty amazing.
He's got, like... I wonder if that's what they're wrapping around it. Like, get some smart water in there.
I don't know, but, like, it cures
concussions. The ice made out of smart water? I don't know.
It cures concussions, because he said he drank some of that, and then he didn't have a concussion. I think if the protocol was in before then, he probably doesn't get back into that Packers game. But, and then he gets injured in week one.
Well, there's a smart water exception in the NFL CBA, right?
Probably. I'm not sure. I'd have to break it down. Russ sustaining a really bad hit when the game was already pretty much in hand.
And I will say, like, I wish we'd had a show last week because I will tell you, and I know it doesn't mean as much now, I was saying to everyone that would listen,
mm-hmm.
9-point favorites, if I was in Vegas, take the points. The Niners cannot play the Seahawks a close game in Seattle.
You're right.
It just doesn't happen.
But, like, the fact that the week before we had, like, 8 punts or something.
It doesn't,
like,
matter. They can't score on the Seahawks.
I wasn't expecting the offensive fireworks we got out of the Seahawks.
No, I wasn't either. But, I mean, I was somewhere in the – if I would have picked before the game, I was saying, like, 24-6.
Okay, you would have been better than me and closer than me. The only one that we nailed was that first game of the year against the Dolphins, which we won't be able to prove, but we totally nailed it. This time I'm man enough to admit, like, I probably would have picked something along the lines of, like, 17-10 or something. I just didn't think that we were
just,
capable
of scoring.
It doesn't
matter who their quarterback is. Ever since Alex Smith
used to beat us.
He beat us here.
Mm-hmm.
No quarterback since him has been from that play with a Niners jersey on has beaten us or even looked semi decent.
Kaepernick did beat us once.
Here though?
No, not here.
That's what I mean.
Not here.
Can't beat us here.
You're right. But yeah, so
that one year when the Niners were coming off the going to the Super Bowl, Kaepernick just, during the thunderstorm game.
Oh, we killed him.
Kaepernick, your famous phrase, he didn't know whether to...
crap or wind his watch.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling it famous. I appreciate that. but yeah, just, I don't know, tough to, because Russ wanted back in the game even when it was a complete blowout and there was nothing left to be gained. Like, he was politicking with everyone that would listen. He kept his helmet on for an extended period of time.
What do you think it means when, I mean, they showed the shot of Doug Baldwin kind of pulling him aside, pounding on the chest?
I think Doug Baldwin was saying, dude, this isn't a close game. We don't need you right now. Sit. And plus, for a quarterback like Trevon Boykin, who has no NFL experience, what a great time to get him some reps. He's going to need it. Like, God forbid anything happens to Russ. Like, Trevon Boykin has to get in there and, in my opinion, do a 75% facsimile of Russ for us to be effective. And, you know, he kind of did that when he was in.
He did. I think...
the interception was pretty bad, but...
Yeah, but, I mean, he's a young quarterback, and I think I like the fact that he's very similar in,
mm-hmm.
in the way he plays the game.
Yeah, you don't have to change the offense.
Maybe a little taller.
Mm-hmm. Like, if you had like, a classic drop-back passer with no mobility, you'd need, like, a whole new offense, pretty much. So, with Boykin, I'm sure that you can keep the same
plays. He's young. He's going to make his mistakes. He threw a pick. I mean, mm-hmm. he did throw a touchdown
but
as well.
7-9, 65 yards, a touchdown. And like the announcers were saying, like, he was smart to look for 89 because Baldwin's legitimately turned into an elite wide receiver. I mean, Doug Baldwin.
Yeah, 89, I don't know. He's not elite in any category except for getting himself open.
I think he's elite in catching. Like, the crazy thing is,
true,
I think 80% of the passes that Russ attempts to him end up in catches.
Yeah,
and that's counting, like, Russ maybe being
off. We're
kind of
spoiled now. Gone are the days when Corin Robinson and Daryl Jackson were dropping everything at Hasselbeck throughout him. And,
mm-hmm.
and we were like, can the Seahawks get a receiver?
Yeah, but Doug Baldwin, 8 for 164, 20.5 a catch for a slot receiver. That's incredible. A touchdown, a long of 59 yards. And again, only targeted 10 times, so it's not like you're throwing excessively his way. He just catches everything that comes his way.
And we can't talk about this game without talking about Christian Michael.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Christian Michael quickly becoming one of my favorite Seahawks.
Now, what is it? Is it because the Niners can't stop our rush? Because last year...
They stopped Todd Gurley, though.
Last year, Rawls had like 212 yards.
Yeah, Rawls went crazy against him. You're right. And then... I didn't know this stat. I mean, I would have guessed that Marshawn Lynch would have done this at some point in his illustrious career, but he had not. Christian Michael, 2 touchdowns in the first quarter. First Seahawk running back since the illustrious Sean Alexander in 05 to accomplish that feat. Sean Alexander actually had 4 touchdowns and a half of football, or 5, I think.
Yeah, I was at that game.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that one was. That one was.
Yeah.
We have. But Christian Michael, again, averaging 5.3 a carry, which is really good. 20
and
carries, 106.
There's something to be said. I mean, in today's NFL, you do kind of have to split the carries. That's just the way it is now.
Mm-hmm.
But can a running back really get going? Can an offensive line get used to blocking for a particular running back if you're going to stick with that split time like they were with Rawls, like basically trading out carries? Now, Rawls is out for, it looks, 3, 4, 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And... You know, I mean,
I think Michael could end up taking his job.
I think if he had, like, the next week is real important. If he has another great week next week, I don't know how Rawls gets back on the field consistently.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it would just be spot duty. And if you look at the Seahawks history, our best teams have had just one bell cow back. You know, Sean Alexander didn't split a whole lot of carries. Marshawn Lynch didn't split a lot of carries. Dating back to Kurt Warner, Chris Warren, Ricky Waters, like, none of them really split that many carries. Like, we've traditionally had, like, a guy who is the 1A running back. And if you would have told me a year and a half ago.
Even when we've had guys, like, that became starting running backs in other places, like Mo Morris and Justin Forsett,
mm-hmm.
they still were, like, legitimately the number two guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, and I think you're right. Like, I think a lot of times, like, running backs pick up momentum throughout the game. And, I mean, true, it does shorten their careers significantly, you know, like, if you're not splitting carries. But with the way he's been playing, I think he can't really take the ball out of his hands.
Big question here. If he has a great season this season, is he still technically a bust?
No. Not as a second-round pick.
But second-round pick that ended up leaving town and then coming back. And
I don't think you can be a bust if you come back and,
as they said
in Dumb and Dumber, and totally redeem yourself.
Exactly.
And I think that's, so, I mean, that's what he's in the process lines, just, of doing.
Being contradictory, we don't have Doug.
Yeah, we haven't had Doug
in a while. We need someone to kind of fill those shoes.
So Russ was playing really well before the injury. He looked like he wasn't back to 100% mobility, but he was able to move around in the pocket. The play that comes to mind is when he bought some extra time and hit Jimmy Graham in the end zone for a touchdown. Jimmy Graham looks about close to 100% back.
Do you remember, like, right when he got hurt last year was when he was finally looking like the Jimmy Graham we know. Mm-hmm. Now he's starting to be that Jimmy Graham again.
It was
that,
starting to
that
click.
That jump ball he Russell threw him.
Where on the free play.
Two defenders on him, mm-hmm. and he went up and got it.
Now, granted, it was a free play, so good on Russ for taking the deep shot. But, yeah, that was a freaking man's catch that he went up and did, because I think originally the San Fran DB kind of caught it first, and Graham just snatched it from him. Jimmy Graham.
And speaking of tight end playing defense, Luke Wilson, double L, with the, with some nice defense too.
Yeah, he prevented an interception.
So I like it.
Mm-hmm. But Jimmy Graham, 6 catches for 100 yards, 16.7 per average, a touchdown as well, along of 40. 9 targets, so, you know, 6 times out of the 9, that's a good percentage as well. And then the Seahawks doing something that I'm sure is – happened a few times. I can't think of the last time, but getting a quarterback, he didn't get to 300. He would have got to 300 if he didn't get injured. And a running back over 100 and 2 pass catchers over 100 as well.
Doesn't happen too often.
Yeah, that's offensive production for you right there. And I think
the Niners defense that shut out the Rams in week 1. And
yeah.
I mean, they didn't look good against Cam the next week, but that's Cam, you know, mm-hmm. it's Cam Newton.
But their offense looked Panthers. Their offense looked serviceable against the Panthers, and
and the Rams.
Other than some Carlos Hyde garbage time action,
and
they
breaking
really didn't
the streak since 2014.
Oh, 100 yard rusher.
That kind of hurt, but I mean, that's you could tell
it was garbage time.
What I liked was that the fact that the defense looked really upset over the fact that Hyde was gashing him at the end.
Mm-hmm.
This is a prideful defense.
Yep.
They still are feeling some of those painful losses. The end of season losses of the last couple of years,
mm-hmm.
where they haven't been at their best. You can tell that they know they can be better. And I mean, they've been the top defense in the NFL for the last 3 years. I mean, they are better than this.
But talk about killing the passing game of the other team. Blaine Gabbert, only 14-25, threw for only 10 more yards than Christian Michael ran for. About only 4.8 average per pass, threw an interception. I mean, they straight up shut him down to the point where, let me see if I can find how many punts.
Torrey Smith made a nice catch, but then immediately came off the field with an injury. You just get the feeling that this Niners team is.
Yeah.
Oof, it's going to be a tough
year. The Niners, 7 punts. You forced 7 punts. That's pretty
amazing.
And
Tyler Lockett. Mm-hmm. With a very nice return on one.
I thought he was going to house it.
It looked close.
And he set up, I mean, there was always kind of people around, like, throughout that run, and he was making everyone miss. What I liked was he set up his blocks really well downfield. That was why I thought he was going to do it. And that was what I always said with Sean Alexander.
He got about 20 more yards because of it, yeah.
That was what I always said with Sean Alexander's best quality, was, like, after he'd already gained 20, you knew he was going to get 40 because he was patient. You know, he didn't just fully sprint and not think like, oh, if I wait for a second, somebody's going to catch up, take that guy out.
He always, once he got past the line of scrimmage, he seemed to always make the right decision. He was very good decision maker.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But, I mean, an outstanding 37-18 win. I mean, San Fran, it always just kind of gives you the feeling like it's a get-back game. When things aren't going right, we play San Fran and we get our stuff together.
Yeah, can we always schedule them after we go to wherever the Rams play?
Yeah.
I feel like that's a good...
And, like, if you remember last year when they started that amazing connection with Baldwin and Russ, where it was like 12 touchdowns in the second half of the year, the first game where they really got it back together was against San Francisco. So, I mean, they're... Like, any time we have kryptonite, they're the time that we lose the kryptonite.
Now, what do you think about Michael Bennett's comments about, I think, to Colin Kaepernick saying that the Niners should be playing him because Blaine Gabbert is, quote, not a challenge?
Well, I think the Niners management may have listened to Michael Bennett, because I've heard the rumors going around that Colin Kaepernick will be starting next week. So
Michael Bennett has the coaching staff's ear. That's nice.
The San Fran coaching staff's ear, yeah. And he's got little tiny shoulder pads, big huge arms. But yeah, I thought that was about as good of a game could go, save for the quarterback sustaining an injury. And I'm just convinced he's going to play. If it took that many people to talk sense into him to not come back into a game that was already decided.
Go to me watching the game, just yelling at my TV, Russell, quit pacing. Sit down.
Yeah.
Sit down.
Well, the pacing's good because that keeps blood in there.
Yeah, I thought about that later, but I was still yelling at my TV.
Yeah, so I just hope that he stays healthy, and I guess that gives us a transition into next week's game with Muhammad Wilkerson and friends. The New York Jets have a pretty awesome pass rush, and we have a pretty dumpy O-line. So,
it's going to be interesting.
And a quarterback that's got limited mobility in both legs now. It's going to be.
And it's one of those lovely 10 a.m. games East Coast.
I'm getting the feeling that this one's going to be ugly. I'm not saying it's going to be a loss, but it's just
Hawks
not going to be a pretty game.
Can find a way to win ugly. Week one was ugly.
Well,
week two was ugly, and they had a chance to win until the Michael fumble.
And Ryan Fitzpatrick can contribute to that ugliness. Like we finally got a turnover in this game. That had been a long time.
Yeah,
coming.
And like a defense that was notorious. It's the first couple years in the Legion of Boom back when Brandon Browner was here. It was all about the turnovers, the ball hawks.
Yeah, for as good as we've played defensively in holding teams, forcing punts, not giving up a lot of yards, not giving up field goals instead of touchdowns when they get into the red zone. That was the missing ingredient. Was you get turnovers, you give your offense the short field. It's easier for them to score, especially when your offense was struggling before the San Fran game. But Ryan Fitzpatrick threw 6 picks last week. And no, I watched every one of the picks in like a replay in my research for this, and about, you could make a good case that 5 of them were his fault. Like, he was making some awful throws, awful decisions, and hopefully that continues.
But wait, this is something that I don't think has ever been said by a talking head ever.
Mm-hmm. Say it.
He's from Harvard.
Oh yeah.
Did you know he's from Harvard?
Yeah, well, let's go up there.
If he could make a better decision, he's from Harvard.
Let's go up there and rough up some smart kids. But, yeah, I mean, he's never played like a Harvard guy. Like, he reminds me of a Central Washington University guy, John Kitna.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities.
Yeah,
there.
Just kind of all of a sudden they play good, all of a sudden they play bad, and you can't really decide if they're a great quarterback. Half the time they end up starting for a team, half the time they're one of the best backups in the league, but you just never know.
That borderline guy.
Yep, and Kitna spent his whole career there, all the way to the end, even when they brought him back.
And it does seem like Fitzpatrick, especially with Buffalo and his recent run there, he had his best games like week one or two where everybody was talking about fantasy football, and then kind of slowly tail off.
Except for last year, he was good all year.
Yeah, that's true. He had that anomaly year like Kitna.
Yep. I think Kitna had a few more years like that, but nevertheless, like Fitzpatrick, tough to figure. And after the Rams had played so horrible against the 49ers, and we were like, oh, you know, Case Keenum, it ended up being just a horrible 9-3 game that was tough to watch, and nothing really good came out of it. So I don't know how this one's going to go. Brandon Marshall, their top pass catcher, is a little dinged up. Matt Forte is still a good running back.
Marshall's not a guy the type of receiver that gives the Hawks that much trouble, but he is a great receiver.
As his wife would call him, Eric Big D Decker. Did you see that? She did a tweet saying, like, Eric Decker just caught a touchdown, and she live tweeted in the game. There's another one for Big D Decker, but she did it, the nickname for Richard.
Oh, I gotcha.
She's got her husband's back, so, but yeah, we can keep it
PG-13. Nice to see.
Yep, absolutely. So he's been healthy and playing well. They're a good team. I mean, the Jets were one of those ones that I put an asterisk by that I didn't want to definitively call a win or a loss just because you're traveling across the country. And now that we know what we know with Russ being hurt going into this one, it's tough to figure.
Here's my argument for a nice Seahawk win. I'll be reaching here.
Mm-hmm.
What do we know about when the Seahawks go to the New York, New Jersey area?
Good things happen.
All right. A couple big blowout wins over the Giants.
5 picks on Eli Manning, a Super Bowl championship.
That's my that's my argument.
Yeah, okay.
I know I'm reaching, but okay. I know the fanboy, the Homerade is definitely flowing, but
I'm going to think that this is a game where our defense carries us. I'm going to go out on a limb too, and I'm going to say that we get a defensive touchdown. We return a pick 6.
Wow.
Yeah, so I think the offense may not have to carry as much of a load. Hopefully, Russ is just managing the game and staying healthy. But yeah, I think the defense is just going to give him, pun intended, fits.
Nice, with a Z.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'll call like 21-10
with the defense. I'm going to go like a Chris Berman style pick. Whoop, and go 16-9.
Yeah. That could be in play too, but yeah. Either way, I don't think there's going to be a lot of scoring. But I will say, I think we're going to get a defensive touchdown. This is the game where that happens. So I guess unless we have any last second Seahawk thoughts, go over to
the vegetables.
Mm-hmm. And I can't strictly just say vegetables. I mean, they've had
the Seattle Mariners for those new listeners.
Mm-hmm. Your girlfriend comes out, you know, like on a, you know, date night or something. How do I look, honey? You look nice. You know, not you look great. Not, you know, like I can't wait to go out with you. It's just like, you look nice. You look okay. that's the Mariners this year. Like, I mean, they competed the whole time. They're now 83-74. The killer for them is I think there's been about five times that they've had an opportunity to go over 10 above 500, and they've lost that game every time, tonight included.
Well, Baltimore lost tonight, giving the Mariners the opportunity to get within one game.
Yeah, I know.
And they didn't.
And they're running out of time.
So basically, you have to, like, the Mariners have five games left, one more down in Houston, mm-hmm. and four home against the very out of its Oakland A's, who I believe are over 20 games under 500.
A's always play us weirdly tough, though.
Yeah, and you know, they just. This is what they live for this year, right? It's just kind of spoil it there at the end.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I guess to recap the season, the best part of the season for me is the heart of the order, Cano, Cruz, and Seager. My goodness. Let's see. 35 homers for Cano, 41 for Cruz, 29 for Seager. If you would have told me that before the season started, I would have taken it and said we'd be a playoff team.
So, I got a stat for you.
Mm-hmm.
Nelson Cruz has the most home runs by a Mariner ever against a single opponent, with 10 versus the Angels.
Mm-hmm.
Jay Buhner is number two on that list, with 9 versus the Twins. He tore up the Twins. I do remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Cano has 8 versus the Astros this year.
Jeez.
So you got... and then Griffey, 8 versus the Rangers back in 94. Different year than...
That's amazing. Yeah.
So that's pretty crazy stat.
And the thing is, they're not just strictly hitting for power a la Richie Sexton or something. Cano's batting 298, Cruz is 286, and Seager's 280. That's about as good a production as you can hope for from the 3, 4, and 5 hitters. The pitching...
It's reminiscent of the Griffey, Edgar, Buhner run.
Now, the problem is there's no, you know, like A-Rod, Sorrento, Segui... You know, like those guys where we had like 8 hitters that were hitting 20 homers.
Joey Cora, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, crying. but yeah, the pitching, I mean, even with Felix being injured, if I were to tell you that he was 11-6 with a 3.61 ERA this year, that's not horrible. I mean, for Felix standards, it's not amazing, but like that's a season that'll get you paid as a pitcher. Like pitchers that are way worse than that get paid a lot. And he was injured for a huge, huge chunk of the year. So, like, if you take out the injury, he's probably got, like, an 18-win season with, like, an ERA in the mid-threes.
But didn't get it done tonight.
No, well, it wasn't his fault as much. Like, I was listening to some of the game. There was a really bad sixth inning where Felix had, like, a routine ground ball that would have ended it, and Lynn botched it at first, and the guy beat it out, and then there was, like, 2 unearned runs. And so I think Felix pitched okay, good enough to keep him in the game. When they score 4, like, and I think Felix only gave up 2 earned. But, yeah, so I'm not going to put that one on Felix. One of the highlights for me, even though he blew a save and we still won the game, the last one, but Edwin Diaz coming in just throwing heat with just, like, lightning on his right arm.
It's nice to see that guy out of the pen throwing 100.
Yep, and young, too. Like, I mean, just at the very, very early stages of his career, already has 17 saves and... He came in for what I called no dime C-Sheck, because if I would have had a dime for every time he'd blow a save, I thought I had no dimes, but apparently he blew saves in games that I did not watch. But even C-Sheck wasn't horrible. The the guy that was kind of the best for me, just because he was consistently there all year, was Iwakuma. Like, you take 16-12, an ERA under 4, and it just seemed like he was the pitcher that would step up when we need it the most this year. The problem ones for me were Paxton and Taiwan Martin. Taiwan Walker. Yeah, I don't know why I was slipping my name. Just like the young pitchers that you were expecting great things from this year, solidifying your lineup. Like, I feel like they both just teased all the time. They'd have like the 10 strikeout, one run, 8-inning game, and then they'd come back and just get shelled. And you never just knew why. And I don't know if either one of them's ever going to put it together, but it's hard to give up on guys that throw in the upper 90s with a lot of movement. And in theory should be, you know, like the cornerstones of your starting pitching lineup for the next like 8 years or so. But I don't know, like the Mariners are stuck in a weird spot because they're old at a lot of positions, but they have some young pitching talent. So I don't know if it's like a rebuild, a stay the course, you know, like they're not a playoff team at the moment. So you're in limbo.
With that 3-4-5 we talked about, I mean, mm-hmm. You got to go for it, right?
Yeah, but the 3-4-5, one of them's like 36 or 37.
That's what I mean, like they're older. Yeah. Or Seager's younger. But
Seager's younger.
Cano Cruz, and Cruz are not exactly.
Yeah, Cano's like 20, early 30. 30s. Yeah. So I don't know, and there's a lot of money tied up.
If you got somebody like Barry Bonds, he gets better at 40. So That's what we're hoping for, I guess.
So you're hoping for a steroid regimen. I mean, you can't rule it out, but I mean, the nice thing is like it seems like people were actually able to hit for power for the first year in Safeco in a long, long time, which was nice to see.
With all of that going on, a tight pennant race. I mean, a race for the wild card.
Mm-hmm. Could have been tighter.
What would you think about the backup catcher just going on Twitter and making some strong statements about Black Lives Matter?
You're going to have to explain this to me because I'm out.
So Steve Clevenger, who was acquired for Mark Trumbo in the offseason.
Oh, horrible trade.
Backup catcher now.
Isn't Trumbo leading the majors in home runs this year?
He's up there. I have to look at the stat. Steve Clevenger gets on Twitter and says, BLM, Black Lives Matter, is pathetic once again. Obama, you are pathetic once again.
Oh, no.
Everyone involved should be locked behind bars like animals.
Jeez.
So.
Is he auditioning for a spot in the future Trump administration?
Yeah. We're not going to get all into the politics here,
That's pretty
rough.
Let's
just say somebody's comment on his tweet was, even Curt Schilling is like, dude.
Ease up a little, buddy. Wow. I'm speechless.
Then he's forced into an apology, and the apology he makes is to his teammates and to the Mariners organization, but he does not mention the people he actually named in the tweet.
I think he's just become my least favorite Mariner.
His exact apology goes, first and foremost, I would like to apologize to Seattle Mariners, my teammates, my family, and the fans of our great game. For the distraction of my tweets on my personal Twitter page caused when they went public.
So he's only apologizing for a distraction and not the words.
Nope.
What a Richard head.
So the Mariners, correct me if I'm wrong, are one of the most diverse teams in baseball.
Well, baseball in itself is very diverse.
But Mariners are up there. I mean, a lot of diversity in that clubhouse.
Yeah.
Do you think the rest of the team is fans of...
It kind of, I mean, even though he didn't use the dreaded N-word, it reminds me of Riley Cooper with the Eagles. You know, like, how do you embrace that guy in your clubhouse if you're like Michael Vick, LeSean McCoy, or DeSean Jackson at that point?
Now, I will say, Tim Thomas for the Boston Bruins, notorious, very Tea Party Republican. Mm-hmm. When teammates were asked, including Andrew Ferentz, who's extremely liberal, they said, well, I know his politics, and that's his politics. I like him as a dude. We don't agree on politics. Do you think this goes a little too far, though?
Yeah, I think it does.
You can't exactly say it's just politics.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like hate speech and stuff.
Now,
so.
Adam Jones, former Mariner. Oof, that one hurts.
Yeah.
Thanks, Eric Bedard. But anyways,
great idea.
Adam Jones has said recently that you will not see the same sort of kneeling for the anthem and things like that in baseball because...
It's a Republican sport. Republican fan base, Republican owners, lots of white players. Like, yeah, it's probably the most Republican sport out there.
But an extremely diverse one, so that seems, for the players at least, seems kind of odd.
Yeah.
But, yeah, can we just get Clevenger out of town? I mean...
Yeah, that's pretty bad. And as a backup catcher, I don't think you're contributing a ton to the team. And especially, like, backup catchers are usually pretty easy to find, a guy who, you know, like, hits 200 and can't run and has bad knees. They're out there.
So the thing is, and also, this is a personal thing.
I didn't see that coming.
On my Twitter profile pic is a picture.
Give yourself a shout-out.
I have Brandon Rivers' Twitter, at Hodges Heroes.
Is that at Brandon Rivers?
At Hodges Heroes.
At Hodges Heroes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, anyways, I got the picture of the adorable daughter. I always keep that in mind. If I'm maybe going across the line a little bit too much, I think, but look at that picture. It's my daughter. Like, I don't really want that representing her. And, you know, I think before I put hit
the answer. Well, that's smart, just not being
like... Now, Clevenger's profile pic is of his very adorable daughter. Not as adorable as mine, but that's just...
Good work.
That's just genetics, I guess. Anyways...
Humble brag.
So, like, those words seem like they're coming from her. To me, that seems like even worse.
Yeah, that is kind of... That's just a good point. That's just me. Got deep there, Riv.
I did. I got it in me every once in a while.
Yep, well played. Okay, I don't know how to wrap that up.
I don't think there is a way to wrap it up.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah, I guess.
It's all that one in a million talk.
Yeah, I guess. Okay, well, I guess we kick it over.
But that'll, if they don't make the playoffs, that will be the wrap-up for the Mariners this year. So enjoy it. Don't spend it all in one place. And our buddy JJ was a Seahawks fan growing up, still is a casual fan now, but he said that the Seahawks owe him two Super Bowls before he goes all the way back in. And they got one, but he says they owe him another for all the heartache, grief. I'm not asking for that much. But the Mariners right now owe me a playoff berth for me to get back on the bandwagon because I've been tortured since 2001.
The fact that there are kids in Seattle that are almost legally able to drive that have never in their entire lifetime experienced, even as a baby, a playoff game.
That says a lot. And, yeah, I just I'm always going to be on the bandwagon until they give me a reason not to. So I'm optimistic at the start of seasons. So I'm always going to give them that chance because I'm open-minded. But
Plus, the start of baseball season is always the most exciting.
I don't feel guilty jumping off the bandwagon with the Mariners because they've given us 10 million reasons to over the past 16 years. So I guess that's what we got. Mariners, good luck. But I will not be. I will not be back on the bandwagon unless you make it to a play-in game. Then I'm in.
Yeah, and the fact that ticket prices went up a lot this year, I mean, I shelled out some money, and I was like, ugh.
Yeah, I've been on the free plan for a few
years. Yeah, I need to get back on that free plan.
Yep, so, yeah, Mariners all wrapped up. Switching over to pop culture, there was a big breakup in the celebrity world that's merited a lot of discussion. The Brad Pitt, Brangelina, breakup.
Angelina Jolie, Brad Pitt, has sparked some parenting discussions.
FBI's involved.
Yeah, it just seems insane.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough to speculate. Brad Pitt, I guess, like, had an argument with one of his older children and redirected him, it sounded like.
Lunged is the phrase that was used in the statement.
Which, I don't know. I grew up in a different era, and I'm not going to put my parents on blast or anything like that. But I think sometimes you need to discipline your child, you know, like, in a way. And it seems like, from what I read in the tabloids, take it as truth or not, Angelina Jolie just lets those kids do whatever they want, whenever they want, pretty much. And then, I don't know, like...
How you raise your kids is not, you know, I mean, I think it's caused a lot of divorces.
Oh, yeah. You got to see eye to eye on that. It's like, what's caused the most divorces? It's like a hat trick. Kids, money, and fidelity. or lack of and stuff. Those are usually
reasons. Money's probably number one, but
yeah.
I say kids is probably right.
Yeah, because I think probably, obviously with not having kids or not being married, but I would think you would need to be on the same page for a lot of the big decisions that come up because you're both hugely invested in it. So, but yeah, the other thing that seems weird to me is like, and I credit her because she's done a lot of good work with the UN, but like, Angelina Jolie must have the most amazing publicist or be the most amazing publicist because she was a home wrecker. She took someone else's husband in the most public way possible. And then she's managed after to not really catch any flack for that other than like the first
genius.
Year,
I don't know. Like,
yeah.
And almost like out of that whole mess, Jennifer Aniston seemed like more people didn't like her over that than.
No, I think women really rallied to Jennifer Aniston. And I think like, and I'm going to take a compliment and a shot simultaneously at her. Like, she hasn't really had good movies, so to speak, of in this.
It's so been it's like, that performance.
It's been about
right,
10
right.
years, give or take, you know. But Jennifer Aniston always gets high profile roles, and she's always well known. And I think a lot of it is the sympathy that she garnered for this situation.
I can see that.
Because, like, to be, like, if it was anyone else, like, she'd be in the same situation as like the chick that played Phoebe on Friends, Lisa Kudrow, you know, like she doesn't really get that many roles or anything like that. She's just remembered for being on an iconic show. Yeah. But there's nothing wrong with just being remembered for being on an iconic show. But I think that breakup kept Jennifer Aniston as an A-lister, like long past her probably natural
expiration. She got the best career out of the five.
Yeah. Probably Matthew Perry second, but like, yeah, she pretty much ran, and no matter how much, and it depends on how much of a fan you were of David Schwimmer's Robert Kardashian performance in the OJ tour, but maybe that moved him up a hair.
He had a nice little performance in Band of Brothers, too, the series that I liked. But.
And then Matt LeBlanc's been in some pretty good shows, but I guess we digress from
Friends. Talk.
So this kind of leaves like a vacuum for who's going to be the next Hollywood it couple. And just to speculate, Jay-Z and Beyonce are huge still, so I don't think they're public enough to really like fuel that. Like, you never really hear anything about them.
And the thing about Brangelina is they were very public.
Yep.
They got paid to put their money or their pictures of their first baby pictures on People.
Yeah.
They got paid. I think Us Weekly or somebody paid for their wedding. Like, the whole thing was photographed.
Yeah, they kind of embraced that celebrity culture. I could see Kanye and Kim Kardashian doing that as well, somewhat, but, like, I don't think they're very likable. Like, people always kind of liked Brad Pitt, at least.
No, I mean, like, I feel like there was probably a large segment of people that are like, oh, Brangelina, that sucks.
I've got an outsider chance.
If Kimye, waking up with Kimye, you know, was no more, I think people would just be like, huh.
I think an outsider to fill that void would be Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis. They both seem very likable, and they're fairly public.
But Ashton's got that Demi Moore background. I mean, like, I don't know.
But they've known each other since that 70s show, and my buddy Tiny and I, who's on the show a fair amount, like, called that long before. Like, the moment Ashton Kutcher and Demi Moore got married, we both said, like, this isn't lasting. He's going to want to have kids at some point. She's like 52. You know, like, he's 25. It's just
another,
like,
thing that splits couples up.
What do they call it? Like a May-December thing? Like, I was like, there's no way that is lasting. She's already had her family.
And unfortunately, but even sometimes biologically, like, the older guy can get talked into it if it's with a younger woman.
Mm-hmm.
I know Jeff Goldblum, I don't think, was ever about kids. So he had his first kid in his 60s.
Impressive.
So, but yeah, the other side is not the same way. But yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know, some random thoughts on
Taylor Swift and me. We can move up there.
Power couple.
Anyone that dates Taylor Swift, like, flies up the charts.
Hey, I'm behind that completely, because you'll take 206 Sports Jocks right up there with
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. That's the
Maybe
game
she'll
plan.
Drop us in one of her next songs. I mean, that's cool.
Well, I'll try to treat her really well and stuff. Like, so I don't want to show up in one of her songs, because she's kind of like the passive-aggressive Tupac of burying people in songs. So, like, yeah, with her and I, it's going to go
the
really
thing
well.
About Taylor Swift is, I've read some stuff that make me think that she's extremely kooky, is the
she's
proper...
She's real cool. She's good people.
is the proper way to say it. Mm-hmm. There was a Vanity Fair article in which she said that she doesn't like going out to clubs on Friday and Saturday nights. Instead, she has some of her best friends over, and she has them dress up in Victorian dresses.
Yeah, when I put the Victorian dress on, it was a little awkward.
To me, I'm like,
But that's one of those things, like, if it works out between us, it's a funny story to come up at the wedding, so.
There you go.
So, yeah, me and Taylor Swift, we're ready to fill the void.
You know, speaking of filling that void, it's been a while since we've had a nice quality, like, national title contender for a college football team.
That team that just barely eked by unranked Arizona, is that who you're talking about?
That's who I'm talking about. Big game this coming weekend.
Arizona's not that great, Brandon.
This is my Hodge.
I know, but I
Arizona, you know, I'm not that worried about it because I explained it away in the fact that Arizona always finds a way down there to at least a couple times a year scare the holy hell out of an
unranked opponent. And every good team is entitled to a scare or two. I will concede that, but Arizona's not that good.
No, they're not. But the thing that they do well that the Huskies, I think, are not set up well to stop is they got a running quarterback in Brandon Dawkins who ran all over the Huskies.
How many yards did he have?
Let's see what he got. He got 13 for 176 and two touchdowns. He only threw for 167, a touchdown.
Good gracious.
So they made Brandon Dawkins look like Michael Vick, yes.
Wow.
But...
that's staggering.
They have their starting D line is three, like, 320 plus pounders.
Guys that are going to be probably falling on Luke Falk in a few months.
Exactly. Ouch. And they have destroyed these non-mobile quarterbacks. But these mobile quarterbacks, I think, could give them problems. J.J. Taylor is a little scat back. Another guy could give him some issues. Mm-hmm. He had 97 yards and a touchdown. But what I liked was the poise of Jake Browning. You know, only two touchdowns and a pick. Not exactly his numbers from the previous 3 weeks, but a touchdown in traffic in overtime to Dante Pettis that ended up being the game winner. The guy who broke out in this game is junior running back LaVon Coleman, 11 carries for 181 yards and a touchdown.
What happened to Gaskin?
Well, Miles Gaskin just had 85 yards on 24 carries.
Ooh. Bogey.
Yeah. One guy averaged 16.5 yards a game, or a carry. The other guy, 3.5.
Gaskin, to me, as a freshman, looked like a star in the making.
And I don't know what the problem is. Apparently, it's not the offensive line.
Yeah. That just seems weird. Like, so Gaskin kind of looked like an NFL caliber running back.
I'm absolutely in love with the Seahawks receiving core. Chico McClatcher, Dante Pettis, John
Ross. Or you mean the Huskies. You can be in love with the Seahawks receiver too.
Huskies, sorry.
Oh, you're good.
You know, and their defense up until this game was pretty amazing, but Stanford is waiting.
Top 10
matchup, Friday night, ESPN.
And thank you for that reminder of taking the back road way to work. I did not want to get stuck in that Montlake mess.
Yeah, Mr. Overnight's here.
Yeah, because they got everything
closed,
right?
Most people's
on
their way home, but yeah. This thing, there's no way it's not.
Is this going to be like a blackout game?
I hope not, because, you know, ESPN, it'd be nice.
But I mean the blackout, like the Huskies wear all black, the stadium wears all black.
Oh, I thought you were talking about local broadcast.
No, that stadium would be packed.
No local broadcast on TV.
Oh, okay.
I don't think the ESPN goes that way, but yeah. I could see them doing that.
It seems like this would be the time to do it. Like, that's a huge, huge matchup.
I mean, Stanford pulled one out against UCLA. Coming in number 7, Huskies number 9. That's
a monster game.
This is about the biggest game, I think, probably 2001.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Huskies haven't really played.
Mariners,
like,
semi-relevant. Huskies, possibly relevant.
I'd say the Huskies are relevant.
This is a throwback to 2001.
Yeah, true.
Anyway.
Except for the Seahawks weren't that good in 2001.
No, they weren't. But yeah, so the winner controls the Pac-12 North. With the Oregon Ducks. I don't know what's going on down there.
Wait till they play you guys, though.
Yeah, I mean, the two straight losses, one in Nebraska, which is
We'll try to make it three.
One loss
for you
to Colorado at home, which is not forgivable.
Colorado's good this year.
Yeah, but at home in Autzen, like, you would think. Yeah, so who knows, but...
Well, we'll do what you guys can never do and try to just put it on them this weekend.
Yeah, I guess we can flip it over to
I'm actually, the Cougars aren't my aren't.
You can
my
talk eyes. About them a little bit though, mine.
But yeah, like we play Oregon pretty well. For whatever reason, I think like the widespread attack makes them somewhat vulnerable. to it. Like
they it's matchups. Like that's yeah. why I was worried about this Arizona quarterback in yeah. this game. Like mm-hmm. it's a matchup.
So yeah, I mean, I think it's gonna be. We always play Oregon tough. I think it's gonna be high scoring. Gonna be a shootout. Come down to the end. I don't know who's gonna win for sure, but Doug will be there. So hopefully he can push him over the top. My Hodge actually is two people in the NFL that I've been extremely impressed with, and I'm a little apprehensive about both of them, just because one of them I don't really like, and one of them is new and could be a thorn in the side of the Seahawks come playoff time in the future. So the first is Bill Belichick. Like, going 3-0 in the Brady-less suspension.
He doesn't even need the backup, Garofalo.
He's going to play Edelman this week, probably. The wide receiver at quarterback. And his justification for that, and it kind of makes sense, Edelman was a college quarterback at Kent State. But, like, they were basically saying they don't want to bring in somebody and limit the playbook. They said Edelman's been here for years. He knows the entire route tree, and he can still throw, and he can still run. They'd rather take their chances with him than, like, just a generic Mark Sanchez off the street or
something. Now, this is coming from a guy that can't stand Belichick.
I can't.
No, for me, I'm saying. That is so arrogant.
It's really arrogant. But then, like, the week, like, I think this is what he lives for, because I think, like, he's obviously a very competitive guy, and one of the narratives one of the narratives going on was it was always like the chicken or the egg, you know, like him or Brady, who is more important to the success of the Pats. And I think Belichick's proving that it's probably him. Like, he's showing that as good as Brady is replaceable. He already showed it with Matt Castle, who never did anything else in the NFL.
Nope.
Like, Belichick went 11-5 with him. And actually parlayed him into a great deal in a first-round pick. So he takes Jimmy Garoppolo, who's never taken, like, snaps in live action, turns him into, you know, like, I think Garoppolo was the leading quarterback rating-wise in the league before he got injured. Then he's like, oh, okay, well, now I'm going to get Jacoby Brissett, who's a rookie who's never played before, and I'm going to have him have a nice two-touchdown game. And who did they beat when Jacoby Brissett was playing?
It beat Houston.
Texans. It was the Texans, yeah. Texans are supposed to be a pretty good team this year. So, like, he handles that. And if he goes 4-0 and starts, like, three different quarterbacks in those games and none of them have the last name Brady,
look out.
Pretty amazing. I don't know, like, you know, you brought up Barry Bonds earlier.
You know, his early time with the Patriots when they were, you know, they were dominant, and Troy Brown at cornerback, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he did it, like,
successfully.
Mike Vrabel caught 10 touchdowns as a defensive end, like, converting to tight end. Like, and Gronk's been out, too. So, like, doing that without – Gronk's probably one of the five or six best players in the NFL. Doing it without him, Brady's probably one of the five or six best players in the NFL. I think Belichick has just laid down the gauntlet, like, I am undisputedly the best coach in the NFL.
To be honest with you, it also makes the argument that Josh McDaniel is possibly the best offensive coordinator in the game.
Maybe.
But not quite good enough to be a head coach.
Yeah, because he wasn't as successful with Denver. And then
amazing with quarterbacks as a quarterback coach in his early time with the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
And comes back as the O coordinator, and my goodness.
Yeah, it's scary. And what are they going to do when they actually have a guy who's, you know, like, knows everything about the NFL, is still somehow in his prime, even though he's older than me? Like, it's just.
And, I mean, let's not forget they're missed extra point away from possibly getting to the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah. Absolutely. So enough praise on Belichick. It hurts my soul to say it, but I needed to bring that up. The next guy, Carson Wentz, is blowing me away as a rookie quarterback. What he did to the Steelers, who you and I both were thinking would be a likely Super Bowl opponent for whoever comes out of the NFC, Seahawks.
But we wanted the rematch.
But Carson Wentz is 3-0 on a team that I think you and I jokingly said was going to go 4-12 this year. So they're already one short of our prediction, which is pretty amazing.
It's just incredible how he's done it.
Yeah, he's mobile. He's got a cannon arm. He hasn't thrown any interceptions this year. Well, what rookie never throws an interception?
They were talking about not starting him in the preseason. That was the talk, like, you ever going to ease him in. And then, wow, he is running away. I mean, very early, but... Like, running away with rookie of the year.
I'm glad I wasn't in Vegas. I'm glad I wasn't in Vegas before the season started, because I would have, like, put Jake's guarantee, which is ironclad, on Ezekiel Elliott winning rookie of the year. And with the way Wentz has played and what he means to that team,
running away with it.
Yeah, he's been insanely good, and it brings up two teams that are just cursed historically. Both had clean shots at him and decided for various reasons not to. The Rams, who had the first pick, decided to go with Jared Goff, who I don't know, is he going to wear a uniform this week even though he's perfectly healthy?
Possibly not.
Yeah, so I don't know about that. They're probably kicking themselves. And the Browns.
And let's just not forget that the Rams traded away about every pick they had for him.
Yeah, and they traded them all to the Browns, who the Browns said, neither one of these two quarterbacks is good enough for us. We like Cody Kessler in the second round, so we're going to slide down and make that happen. And the Browns have been looking for a franchise quarterback since, like, Bernie Kosar in the early 90s, and they've never got one. And here's this guy who's looking like he's going to be in that conversation for the next 15 years with the way that he's playing. And I know, like, that sounds like a big overreaction, and I wasn't going to do this until what they did to the Steelers. The Steelers, Brandon. Like, the Steelers are a really good team.
Everyone was putting them up there as one of their top four teams in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. And nobody was talking about the Eagles like that. And it's just this magical rookie quarterback who's just tearing it up. But it's a little nerve-wracking for the Seahawks because I don't necessarily want like another NFC team to be really good at any point. So, you know, like they're in the AFC.
And the Cowboys also seem to be kind of riding the ship.
Yeah. Oh, and I guess to loop back in the long run for the Seahawks, tied for first in the division right now. We're 2-1. The Rams are 2-1.
Cardinals
a happy 1-2.
Oh, 1-2, that's right.
Yep, they're 1-2. Thank you, Bills, for a surprise win. Didn't see that coming, especially after
this
how horrible they've
been. This has all the makings of a Cardinals, like...
And the Niners 1-2.
A year where they do not, like, they turn out 7-9, and you're like, how did you do that with
them? Yeah, like, last year you looked at the Cardinals, and it was like, how are we going to catch these guys? We got to go 13-3 to tie them, you know, like, and we started off slow. So it was just all year you kind of, like, had this tough feeling that you weren't going to catch the Cardinals.
Performance against Carolina is now in his head.
Yeah, I had mentioned that in one of our pods before. Like, it's just kind of, I compared him to...
It was one of the single worst, like, in recent memory.
It was right up there with Jake DeLome and Matt Schaub. You know, guys who'd been good for a while and completely fell off. And it's too early to call that, but thank you, Buffalo Bills. I did not see that one coming at all, especially after how horrible the Bills had been playing. They were 0-2, fired their offensive coordinator. Probably should have fired their defensive coordinator if he wasn't the head coach's brother.
Yeah.
Be like JFK firing
Ryan's
Robert Kennedy
are going out together.
Attorney General.
And they could
oh, yeah.
be going out. Yeah, this gave him a little reprieve.
Although, man, Rex Ryan said something really funny the other day. He was saying they were asking him about, like, is he worried about who the Patriots are playing at quarterback? He's like, well, none of them are named Brady, right? And he was like, they can put Belichick out there and we're going to bring the heat on him.
Stuff.
So, and the way he said it was just cool. Rex is a funny guy. He'd be great on TV if he gets fired.
Yeah, I mean, that spot seems to be meant for him.
But those are my Hodges, and I'm just going to bring up a clip to lead us into Mount Rushmore. So, explosive, Brandon. What does explosive mean to you?
Boy, what does it mean? It means that can't be contained.
Combustible.
Just completely unbelievable.
A little scary.
Yeah.
Even unpredictable. Could be trouble. All these players, we're doing a Mount Rushmore of the most explosive players in NFL history. And we're probably going to do it like on players that we've seen with a couple exceptions that I had to put in just because the numbers really surprised me. So to me, explosive is a guy who, regardless of what position he plays, if he's on the 15-yard line and has 85 yards to cover, he's a threat. The moment he steps on the field, the guy can score from anywhere. So, like, you know, Frank Gore, who's like had a great career as a running back, you know, like, never really struck me as explosive because he'd move the chains.
Even when he had a couple games where he gouged.
He had a couple explosive games against Seattle. But just in general, you know, like those guys that just move the chains, you know, like over and over again, don't just put the fear of God into you. Like, and in no particular order, I wrote down a lot of people because there's a lot of good explosive players. starting, I guess, and no low-hanging fruit for this because these people are all really explosive. But you remember Cordell Stewart, like, at the beginning of his Steelers career?
Yes.
Like, he had catches, runs, and passes all, a hat trick, greater than 70 yards in one season.
Incredible.
He was so fun to watch until they converted him to just a complete quarterback, and he convinced himself that he's a drop-back passer. I loved him when he was running hot routes.
Yeah, you know, and like, to be honest, that was when Steelers were at their best in that kind of
in that era.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Took over from McDonald, right? Neil McDonald.
Yeah, yeah, and then played with Neil O'Donnell. Turned a few Neil O'Donnell swing passes into long touchdowns. Very explosive player. Herschel Walker, 84 TDs in 138 games.
The guy who claimed that he never really hit the gym.
But he was the most shredded individual ever.
He really liked watching TV, and he would just work out, do push-ups and sit-ups during commercials.
Yeah, but he had 284-yarders in one game once. I mean, that's the definition of explosive. Like,
so explosive that the Minnesota Vikings traded about every pick they had
to set up the Cowboys dynasty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's responsible
That's
for
what
it.
He'll be remembered for. Just
Him and Jimmy Johnson, regardless of what Jerry Jones would like you to believe, are responsible for that Cowboys dynasty. Like, Jimmy Johnson said he had to convince Jerry Jones to make that trade. And from Jerry Jones' perspective, you don't really want to lose Herschel Walker, you know, like when he's at the apex of his game. But Herschel,
that was in Johnson's, like, early part of his tenure when he still had Jones's ear. I don't think he'll be able to pull that move.
No,
later.
Like once they started hating each other.
Because Jones's ego was so huge.
Yep. He'd be on the Mount Rushmore greatest egos.
Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm. But and even when Herschel Walker was a little older near the end of his career with the Eagles, he had a season in 1994 where he had a receiving touchdown, a rushing touchdown, and a kick return touchdown, all 90 plus yards. So, Desmond Howard, one of my all-time favorites. I was watching the game where he did the Heisman pose for the first time, and that was one of the coolest
things
to see
live. Now, were you watching the game where Mario Bailey did it, too?
Yeah, but, like, Desmond Howard actually won the Heisman, so it was a little cooler.
No, you know why he was doing it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, what a creative thing to do, you know, and, like, everyone's done it since, but, like, I'm surprised no one had ever done that before. Like, that would rank up there with the greatest end zone celebrations I'd ever seen. But Desmond Howard, and I'm going to do the NFL version, on the Packers where he was Super Bowl MVP as a kick returner, that'll probably never happen again, had 875 return yards and 3 TDs in the regular season, 2 playoff TDs, and during the playoffs averaged 27 yards per touch, which is just staggering.
And I mean, I don't have the list in front of me. That, how many guys have won a Heisman and Super Bowl MVP? There can't be that many.
Marcus Allen, Tony Dorsett, and Roger Staubach, and Desmond Howard. I think that's it.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up. But
I think that's it. It's a small list.
Staubach, Plunkett, Allen,
Plunkett
Howard.
Oh, Plunkett, too.
You
Plunkett.
Got all four.
Well, I didn't get Plunkett.
Who did you say instead of Plunkett?
I didn't say anyone.
Oh, yeah, so Staubach, 63 Heisman with Navy. Super Bowl VI with Cowboys.
Staubach.
Staubach. Plunkett, 1970 Heisman with Stanford. Super Bowl 15 with the Raiders. Marcus Allen, 81 Heisman with USC. Super Bowl 18 with the Raiders. And Desmond Howard, 91 Heisman with Michigan.
Oh, now I know who I said. I said Tony Dorsett. He must have not been a Super Bowl MVP.
Super Bowl 31 with Packers.
Okay. DeSean Jackson, who still to this day is freakishly explosive. He just had like a 60-yard touchdown that was pivotal in the Redskins winning. But his first 3 years, he had 11 scores from 60-plus yards. Like, the guy doesn't catch 5-yard touchdowns. He blows the roof off the place. O.J. Simpson averaged 30 yards per kick return one season. And that's not even counting, like, all the explosive runs that he had.
2,003 yards rushing in a single season.
In 14 games, mind
you. Now, would you say Eric Dickerson is also explosive?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. He had a lot of long runs. He didn't look as cool doing it just because he had that long stride, so he didn't look that fast, but no one caught him.
And he broke the record.
Gale Sayers, who had a really short career, 22 TDs in 14 games. Won a rushing title, had 8 kick returns for touchdowns, and 4 receptions of 65-plus yards. That actually might be our low-hanging fruit.
65, back in the era when rookies really had a hard time breaking in, and he was the exception.
Actually, from reading those, I think Gale Sayers is a low-hanging fruit. Now that I've got it. Like, everyone's been really good and explosive.
But Sayers was explosive from the start.
8 kick returns, too, and 4 receptions of 65-plus yards in those 22
TDs. Very elusive
TDs.
Runner.
Mm-hmm. And just... like Barry Sanders before Barry Sanders, but just got a tragic injury before like they had the good modern medicine and surgeries that could get you back. Like the surgeries
were
archaic.
I have to get there
then.
With you, Sayers. Mm-hmm. Now, what about, and here's a guy that I remember as a young kid,
mm-hmm.
tearing it up was Roger Craig, who produced the first 1,000 season.
Yeah, and those high knees too, he was just brutal physical.
And one
runner.
Of my favorite stories was, we all know Jerry Rice as a workout machine, mm-hmm. right? Well, you know who started him on that?
Roger Craig. On that hill.
Roger Craig would take him out to this hill out in San Francisco.
That hill's notorious because I think they would sprint 2 miles up a hill, pretty much.
And Jerry Rice has told stories about how the first time Roger Craig, he thought he was in great shape, and Roger mm-hmm. Craig took him out there and just blew him away.
Yep. And then Ricky Waters tried doing the hill and couldn't finish and stuff. And Ricky Waters is a great athlete.
And they
as well.
Asked Joe Montana if he wanted to do it, and Joe just laughed at him.
Yeah, he doesn't need to do that. this one, I don't have the numbers to back it up, but I have the memories. Michael Vick, when he first got into the league, like that's if you want to define it as a threat to score from any position on the field.
The Vick experience commercial. Mm-hmm. I mean,
absolutely one of the strongest arms in NFL history. Not accurate, but strong and threw like a beautiful spiral.
I remember him in college for Virginia Tech in that national title game against Florida State when Florida State was stacked.
Yeah.
And going in thinking, well, Michael Vick might win this by himself.
Mm-hmm. And in his career, he averaged 7 yards per carry as a quarterback, so that's an amazing weapon.
Yeah, I would put a strong recommendation that we put Vick on that list.
Yeah, I think
so
too.
You say explosive, he comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. Ed Reed from the defensive side, 54 picks, 10 fumble recoveries, 26 punt returns. Let's see. Oh, he had 90 times in his NFL career in a live game situation where the ball was in his hands as a defensive player, had 12 touchdowns on those 90 times, and averaged 20 yards every time he touched it. So, like, any time that he gets an interception, it's not just getting an interception, getting tackled, running out of bounds. He's creating positive yards in addition to forcing a turnover. And he was just, I remember that. He was lethal with the ball in his hands on an interception. Devin Hester.
Yeah, I was about to mention Devin Hester.
Have to give a shout-out. Now, the numbers I have might be a little outdated, so if he's done more since the list that I looked at. I know he's the career leader in combined kick returns and punt returns for touchdowns. 10 punt returns at least, 4 kick returns at least, probably
and,
more.
And with his touchdown in the Super Bowl against the Colts, gave them a shot at that game
and that,
to begin with.
That Bears team was the worst Super Bowl team in my lifetime that I can remember. And you're right, like he actually for a second kind of made you believe.
And Hester was the one that I believe that returned that... that kick that got knocked down by the wind all the way?
Yeah, like the first 108-yarder or something. Randy Moss, just like any spot in the field. And I think like during that Super Bowl where Tom Brady ripped off that 75-yard throw that was just a little too far.
If you were to like put a gun to my head and say, name the single best, like most talented receiver in NFL history, I'm not going with Rice. I'm going with Moss.
Yeah, because Rice was the hardest working and the most committed and ultimately the best.
Moss just uncoverable.
Yeah, absolutely. Randy Moss was kind of like Griffey in baseball.
And getting to see him play live on that that game that we mentioned earlier, that one as well, mm-hmm. even though he didn't do as well, was a highlight for me.
Bo Jackson, another short-lived, but my
Bo
goodness.
Bo Jackson's got to make this
and,
list, too.
Just for the Tecmo Bowl aspect, you probably weren't playing video games when you were young.
No, but I did have seen the recent commercial where they're in the SUV.
So I played probably like more hours of Tecmo Bowl than I care to count with my brother. And Bo Jackson was so good in Tecmo Bowl that they only gave him one play. So what would generally happen in Tecmo Bowl, it was, you know, like it's a game from the 80s, so it doesn't have like the up-to-date stuff of Madden or anything. So there was each team had 2 rushing plays and 2 passing plays. So your playbook mm-hmm. is 4 total. if you have a 1 out of 4 chance of the defense of picking your opponent's play, and when you picked your opponent's play, the offensive line just laid down, didn't block, and you had like a steam rush. Bo, you could pick his play, and he could still go for 80.
Wow.
With everyone in there and stuff. And like, I remember playing my brother, and for an entire game, I just picked Bo's play every time and left myself vulnerable to the Marcus Allen play, the Tim Brown play, whatever else was there.
Just
because the Bo play was a free touchdown if you didn't pick it. Just because he was so explosive.
And
the reason I'm mentioning all this Tech Mobile stuff is, yeah, the new commercials, but that's based in reality. Bo was freakishly dangerous on the football field.
I think it's kind of cool that they bring that in, you know.
Yeah.
Into the commercial world.
He only played like 4 years, and in those 4 years, he had 388-plus-yard carries. And this was against the Seahawks in that Bosworth game. For the full game, he averaged 12 yards per carry and had 3 touchdowns.
Which, where do you land on that?
How so?
The people who try to say he just completely blew up Bosworth and basically ended his career with that.
He didn't end Bosworth's career, but he did completely blow him up. Especially with all the trash Bosworth was talking before, and then Bo's averaging 12 yards a carry. I mean, he maybe stole his manhood a bit that day. And when they met head-to-head, Bo drove him 5 yards back into the end zone. Like, he looked like a human being running into a train. And the train won.
Okay, I gotcha. Mm-hmm. I mean, you watched that live, I believe, and I did.
Yeah, the other two sports star, Deion Sanders. This is a pretty cool list. So the first play of his career, the first time he ever touches the ball, he muffs a punt, runs 12 yards backwards with people chasing him, turns around and goes 90 yards for a touchdown. And that just kind of set the tone.
The book about the Dallas Cowboys run, I read that, and they talk about how when Deion came in, the coaching staff was really not happy with the bad habits that Deion was teaching the rest of the team about practice, the way he performed in practice, and the way he lived his life.
Cats couldn't get away with the stuff Deion did. He was that much better.
Because Deion was so fast and so naturally gifted that he didn't need that to be one of the best ever.
Yep. And, I mean, for a guy that scored a receiving touchdown, a punt return touchdown, a kick return touchdown, an interception or a fumble recovery touchdown, multiple interception touchdowns, 22 TDs in his career, an average of 25 yards per interception return, which is better than our Ed Reed's, who was pretty amazing too. The last guy that I have, and you don't think of him as explosive, but he has the most 50-plus yard touchdowns in the NFL, Jerry Rice, 36 times. He had touchdowns of 50 yards or greater. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Wow.
So I had to write him down at that point. Like I said, I thought of Jerry Rice as more of a guy who moved the chains, but you can't deny those numbers. Like 50-plus yard touchdowns, he was amazing. Barry Sanders was the most exciting to me, but like he lacked a little bit of that elite breakaway speed, so he kind of got caught from behind. Mm-hmm. More than he should, but like from
if you were going to say agility standpoint, agility wise,
he was the best.
He's the best ever.
Mm-hmm. But I think to be truly explosive, you have to be a threat to score every time you touch the ball, not a threat to get caught at the 10. So we said Gale Sayers for sure. The other ones I'm kind of thinking.
I like Vic.
Yeah, Vic was Barry Sanders-esque with an arm. Attached. And he was
also, I mean,
he's faster
go with
than
the
Barry.
Tecmo Bowl. What was it?
Oh, Madden 03.
03.
Jeez. Vic was so fun. I would play like dynasty modes with Vic, and I'd throw 40 touchdowns every year and rush for 2,000 yards.
I don't play as much football, or I haven't played Madden in years, but I love playing running quarterbacks just because of Madden 03. Like,
yeah.
It made me fall in love with having a running quarterback.
Because it just opened up your options that much more. Huh, no receivers are open. I'm going to go gain 15. And then I'm going to run out of bounds and not take the hit.
And then, you know, have the slide option now.
Yep.
In the last version I played, at least.
Yep, it was in the 03 one, too. Yeah, like, yeah, Vic and Bo Jackson were the best video game football players of all time, or guys that you could play a video game
with.
And I
would love to play as the Falcons.
Even as a Seahawks fan, my dynasty team was the Falcons.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because Vic was so much more fun to play with than Matt Hasselbeck.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff. No disrespect to Hasselbeck.
So Vic, Sayers, I think...
And then maybe Bo and Deion.
I was going to say Bo and Dion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a lot of these guys really, really explosive. I think from seeing them both, Bo was more explosive than Herschel Walker. And Dion was, just a constant threat when he had the ball in his hands, and he didn't get it in his hands all the time. They probably should have played him at wideout more.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he was always in great shape. He seemed like he had the conditioning to play both
ways. And supposedly has run the fastest 40 time, right?
Yeah, it's up for debate. Bo Jackson ran a 4.12, but that was hand-timed. Dion had the fastest electronically timed.
But the fact that look at Bo Jackson and look at Dion Sanders' body type.
Yep.
Bo Jackson, hands down on that. So, I guess, wrapping up that list, what a list.
Mm-hmm. Sayers, most explosive players
in NFL
history.
Bo Jackson, Dion Sanders, mm-hmm. Michael Vick.
Yeah, you can't get much better than that. Like, all just really, like...
When you talk about explosive, it can play in any era, too, comes to mind. Like, somebody that's explosive can play in any era.
Yep, just guys that were destination viewing, you know, Vick's playing tonight? Yeah, I'm going to watch that when he's in his prime, because I had the chance of seeing something truly spectacular in that game. Even a Vick 13-10 game, like, all the way into the fourth quarter, you're still watching, like, oh my gosh, he's going to do something cool.
Yeah, and having him in fantasy football, there were some times where it worked and sometimes when it didn't.
Yeah, he had, he probably had the greatest fantasy football game. I didn't have him, but I was playing against somebody that had him, and I was up 50 points going into the Monday night game, and Vic was projected for like 25, and he scored 70. He threw for over 300 yards, threw 3 touchdowns, ran for 3 touchdowns, and rushed for like 150, and just probably played the most killer game. And this was when he was on the Eagles. This is like post-prison Vic.
Yeah, I know he had that one year before they became the dream team, and then...
Yeah, and then it just kind of seemed like it just kind of passed him by a little bit at that time. But, man.
Anyways, what a list. Mm-hmm. What a show.
Yep.
206 Sports Talks wrapping it up. I guess go Hawks.
And we are out.